Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's interview is with Ben Caro, whose film Cathedrals at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2018 took home three awards. It got Outstanding Short Film, Outstanding Director, and Outstanding Acting for an Individual for Brendan Sexton III. Those were all Filmmakers Awards, which are chosen by a jury of filmmakers whose films have played at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in the past. So the fact that Ben won over his peers is kind of impressive. Normally I tell you to go watch the film. I say go to discoverindiefilm.com and watch the film now. But Cathedrals is not out yet. It's still on the festival circuit. But you know, I really wanted to talk to Ben, and it turns out because his film is inspired by a short story written by Raymond Carver and was actually made with permission of the estate, I don't think we're going to be sharing it anytime soon, so let's talk to Ben right now. And by the way, this is an extra long interview because I kind of owed Ben one. Ben has been a great sport. He was involved in a schedule change at the festival and took it like a champ. I really appreciated that. So, you know what? I edited this one less. You get to hear way more from Ben than you normally do from the filmmaker. So, you're welcome. All right, here's Ben.
I grew up with a VHS recorder. My father had one. I can't remember what camera it was, but I'm sure it was the size of like a microwave.
Yeah, because VHS was extra big.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'd have friends over and we would shoot fun little sleepovers. Sleepovers were my jam, and we'd do little talk shows and then watch it back. And then we got a little bit more funky and started doing some stuff with a lot of in-camera editing.
As you say, so you learned how you could hit pause,
yeah,
shift things around, and then you were editing in camera.
Realizing that the quicker you cut, the better it always was, you know. And by cut, I mean pressed a button. And that was a lot of fun to try to get that timing perfect. But it was mostly just goofing around, yeah. So that was... Yeah, that was childhood, and
all through right up through middle school and high school.
You know, I'm trying to remember. I think the cameras got smaller, and
yeah,
I think
came out with VHS-C.
That's right.
And Hi8.
Hi8. I mean, I think I'm trying to remember VHS-C. Those were the ones that were like about the size of a palm, right?
Yeah, and It was you could put it inside a thing and fit it in a VHS VCR and hit play.
Right, exactly.
But it was a smaller VHS tape.
Yeah, that felt like the future. I was like, this camera is making all sorts of transforming
yeah,
noises.
Yeah, digital might have never...
Yeah, we really messed up by going the digital route. I think that the playfulness of childhood kind of transformed into the... structural boundaries of like fun in school assignments, but we really stretched those because of kind of our practice we had with screwing around as kids.
In school assignments relating to video?
Yeah, I think there was like, let's do a history lesson and you can kind of shoot it however you want. There were a couple of those things and we made it really goofy and really fun.
So that's a cool school that you got to do that.
Public school, Northern Virginia. I was very lucky. Fairfax County represent. And they, it might happen once a year, you know, but it was always like a great opportunity to really screw around and make people laugh in class.
And did you get to use editing equipment at school?
Eventually I did. Yeah. Maybe my senior year I took video production and there was Premiere. I learned that. And that felt natural. It was pretty fun. Yeah, now I'm thinking about it, we had a little morning show that they would air on Friday mornings. Was it called like Oakton TV? I can't really remember. And yeah, you'd come up with little sketches. I think you'd pitch them to the class. And, I did like some sort of a parody on the OC called the FC, Fairfax County. And it was like this big opening with that song, California, and it cut to us, and we were just sitting in a parking lot wondering if we should go to the mall or not, and then it would end. And that was just kind of like the joke. There's nothing to do here. But yeah, that was fun to screw around with. Mm-hmm. I was more of a drama kid, though. I was doing the drama all throughout.
So you were doing some acting, some stage stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stage stuff. Spring musical, you know, There was some drama stuff.
So you were singing and dancing, too?
I was doing, yeah, doing a lot. I was in chorus.
So you were an artistic kid. You were, besides playing with cameras, you were performing.
Yeah. I really loved performing. And I loved, you know, being in front of people and, like, feeling their energy. And I think it's still maybe a problem for me. I'm a little too much of an attention whore sometimes. But I love being on stage and feeling people, you know, making people laugh or having people's attention and, you know.
All right, so you're going to have an interesting – so I'm curious – how you evolve into directing, but so what happened in college? How'd your interests expose themselves there?
Well, really, I made a choice to follow film in high school. I think it was, you know, you're wondering what you should do, and you have a lot of interests. I think a lot of us artistic people, you know, yourself included, I'm sure, you know, have multiple things that you, if you had all the time in the world, you'd love to be a famous painter or a well-known writer or work on your photography. And I think
everyone wants to play an instrument.
An instrument, you know, you want to be a dancer, who knows? And I think,
God, I got to take dance lessons.
Yeah. I mean, we're all already all dancers. You know, some of us are just more self-conscious than others.
I am told to stay away from the dance.
Oh, yeah? You're not allowed?
I've been told, yeah.
You've been kicked out?
Yeah, by the authorities, actually.
I would have loved to have been there. I think I've heard this before, too, that film seemed like a great amalgamation of a lot of these pursuits, you know, as the visual aspect of fine art or visual art, you know, and photography, it's the storytelling aspect of, you know, writing, and then you get to work, you're working with actors and performance. So I think it was like, how can I still pursue all these things or work on that craft?
Right. And you learned that through the creation of film content, that was a type of performing that satisfied you. You didn't need to be on stage anymore or on camera.
I would have loved for that to have been the case. What happened was I was mostly interested in the writing aspect. So in college, I didn't pursue acting in front of a camera. I did do acting on stage, so I still got to fill that need and feel that pleasure of performance. And it was only when I moved to Los Angeles that I started pursuing acting, because you get here and people are like, oh, you are a, you know,
Is that right after college?
This was, I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah.
But I'll just say, this was like a few years out of college, because I went back home in Washington, D.C. I worked for America's Most Wanted for a couple of years, few years, as their web editor. And then I came out here because I was done editing. So immediately once I came out here, I started editing again and acting. People said, hey, you're like a white male. Like, you could be an actor. You should be an actor. And you're like, maybe I should. And then you go on a lot of auditions and realize.
Well, it must have been personality related, because they actually don't offer every white male in L.A. a role.
No, absolutely. You're right. You're right. But
people met you as an editor and said, why aren't you acting?
Yeah, people met me as a person, you know, out and about, and they said, oh, you know, you look
in line
like
at Trader Joe's.
You could be an actor or something. I don't know. And
I believe it.
Yeah, I believe them too. I shouldn't have, but I did. And it was kind of a head fake. I got out here. I got this acting job that was kind of a sketch comedy thing. I got it off Model Mayhem. I put my profile up on Model Mayhem, got a random message from some guy. Hello, would you like to act in my thing for maybe $50 or $100 a day? And you don't have to audition. I just think your look works. This was like a week after coming to Los Angeles.
This was a clothed job.
I was clothed, yeah.
Wow.
I had different clothes even, you know, different characters.
I'm shocked. All right, now, is there anything I need to know about the college years besides just you learned how to edit, you worked on all your filmmaking skills? Was there anything? I'm happy to stay with you in L.A., but
I hear you.
But the film I saw at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, Cathedrals, is so well made and so polished. I think I told you at the mixer before the festival started that I kind of expected to meet a much older person than you based on your film, because it's so it's put together in a way that, as an ageist, I assumed it was from an old vet who'd been around filmmaking for decades.
That is an amazing compliment. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think that's because of my experience in editing, probably. You know what I'm saying? I knew how to cut things out.
But you emerged from college with a focus on editing, almost.
Well, that was kind of an accident.
That was just a job.
It was just a job. My internship at the end of college, I happened to get one that was an editing internship, which rolled into the America's Most Wanted job, which rolled into editing features. But before that, what I'll say about college is, when I told you that Cathedrals is based on a short story by Raymond Carver called...
Inspired by.
Yeah, it is actually inspired by. You're right. It's not based by. It's called Cathedral, in that the short story. It's just a singular. You know, I made it plural. That's my contribution to the artistic world. And I think it was just an intro to creative writing class that we were reading some Carver. I think a lot of people read Carver in their intro to creative writing class. And the story Cathedral, I think a lot of people, hits a lot of people because it's a first person limited story, and it's kind of like a lot of people's first introductions into unreliable narrators, where then the person that's leading you through the story is like a total dick and also, you know, drunk or high and bigoted, and you're just kind of in this person's head, and at the same time somehow you're not judging him because it feels the writing's empathetic.
And when you read it in college,
mm-hmm.
right then and there, did you think, someday I want to see this on screen? Were you doing that kind of thought?
I actually, pretty soon after that, I took a directing class in college and went to Boston University, and their communications and film school is completely separate from the fine arts school. And I've talked to other people about this, where it's a strange thing where they separate the actors so distantly from the rest of people that could use the actors. This class was the exception. So we had a bunch of actors in there that were much louder than us and actually talking, answering the professor when questions were asked without raising their hands, which was like scandalous. The kind of culmination of that class was to shoot a little 5-minute short, something like that. And then in 4 hours, it was kind of like, there's no production. It was just like, let's just grab actors and shoot something. And I did a kind of little college version of an adaptation of Cathedral then. And it was something I was passionate about representing then. And after it was done, people were kind of interested in it, especially then. I did that sound experiment where, you know, one of the main characters in Cathedral, the story, is blind, and I wanted to have the audience kind of experience the world as that person might experience it. So listening to the audio versus, our visual, dominant visual sense. So what I did was delay the visuals far too long, about 60 seconds. So you would see somebody's mouth move, or no, you'd hear a word, and then 60 seconds later, see their mouth the word. And it frustrated lots of people in the class. But some people, very few people, were like, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I could see this working if you were able to, you know, have it come in and out. They didn't know the solution.
Yeah, rein it in a little, but they saw that you were doing something artistic with the medium.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that led me to think.
Which is something you'd started as a kid, playing with the medium. But with the time shift, the 60 seconds,
mm-hmm.
you bring it together at the end when the lead character has his awakening.
That little story, that little short, was basically just the time when the blind character comes into the room up until the point after the paper bag is being drawn on. There's no interaction with anybody else.
Right, you don't see the setup, you don't see the follow-up, it's just right there, it's a little piece of Act 2.
Yeah, and I think that, no, I did not bring the sound together, but watching it back, we had a long push in to this character's eye, and you couldn't see the mouth, and I thought to myself, wouldn't it be interesting if during this moment of, these two characters coalescing, the sound coalesces as well with the visuals. And so that was kind of a major impetus and a major motivation to doing the film the right way and having some more money put into it.
But a decade earlier.
This was a decade earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, well, a little bit more. It took me that long to I don't know if it was working up courage or working up motivation to say, you know, this is a bucket list thing. I'd love to make a short film now. Let me hop on Kickstarter and make it happen.
But after the student film, was that early in your college career? Was it in the middle?
I think it was junior year.
Junior year.
Undergrad, yeah.
So did you make a few films while in college?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, a few different little shorts. And I got to, you know, wrote a couple, one or two features or something. The shorts were fun. We were the last little generation there at BU to be editing on Scenevex. So that was pretty amazing. You know, shot some stuff on Bolexes and edited on Scenevex. And I got a little weird and experimental. I used the Jim Jones audio for something. It's just like, college was a weird place, man. It was like, I'm not going to think practically about anything. If I could do anything better, I think kids these days are a little bit more conscientious and probably because of YouTube and Vimeo.
Yeah, they actually think people are going to see their work.
Exactly.
Even though they're not. putting on YouTube doesn't mean people are going to see what you're doing.
No, but it at least has a platform. It's not like, I think the equivalent would have been taking these films that were serviceable or at least interesting enough and showing them to festivals, submitting them. I think at least people these days are like, oh, if I can put it on YouTube, then I could also, you know, submit it to whatever festival. It's not just homework. And I was just thinking of it as homework.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your professor and classmates would see it. Mm-hmm. But it was really for you.
Yeah. It was for me. That said, I'm kind of somebody who's probably due to the performance thing with drama. I'm definitely motivated by people's reactions to things and feedback. So I think that, yeah, I do have that regret. I wish that I had spent more time. I wish that I had spent more time focusing on sharing the work you do in college or that you're forced to do. It's the whole thing where you're given these boundaries and sometimes you make some interesting stuff with them.
All right, so now we can jump because I've got some pieces. So you finish college, you get the editing work, you move into editing a really well-known the web editor for a really well-known enterprise.
That's right. Got to catch those America's scumbags. Got to lock them up.
Yeah, but all editing is editing.
Editing is editing. You're right. I was just editing unscripted stuff, doing a lot of interview cutting, doing a lot of behind the scenes. You know, I'd grab a camera and run around and interview producers about upcoming segments or...
Right, so you were getting the pieces you needed as well.
Yeah. So a lot of featurettes and a lot of teases toward the next show that would go on there. We had a behind-the-scenes show. We had, like, something called the Rundown, which was teasing toward the show coming up. So it was a nice crash course. I had a lot of autonomy for my first job. Pretty lucky. I squeezed in there just
before. Yeah, because to them, the web was something new. They're like, we just need a kid to be putting things on the web for
exactly.
us. Cool.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to move out to Los Angeles?
It was to actually jump into a scripted material, get into film. I was deciding between New York and L.A., and I was, I guess I had 4 years of doom and gloom up in Boston. I thought I should get some sunshine. And I was had a friend out here. I was seeing a girl that was out in L.A. So a lot of things just kind of fell into place. And I like driving, you know, so I wanted to take that cross-country trip.
Cross-country trips are the best. Mm-hmm. That's why there's so many road films, because it really is
a good something thing. Magical.
Yeah.
Especially on your own.
And there was no thought of doing graduate film school. You just came out here.
Yeah. I don't know if it was a conscious thought, but I think it was probably the right thought to me. I don't know.
You didn't want a mountain of debt? So anyway. Right. So what happened when you got to L.A.?
I fell into all the amazing opportunities here without any conscientious idea about where I was headed. And you can kind of lose yourself with reckless abandon with acting, writing, directing, producing, whatever. So I did follow all these things. You know, eventually I focused. I'm always writing scripts. So I was writing stuff and I was still editing freelance. Yeah, I kind of just became a freelancer.
I would assume with that America's Most Wanted thing on your resume, you had a big advantage over other people who moved to this town and like, well, I can edit.
Right.
I mean, that was something real on your resume, which...
Yeah, it's true. It's actually, it was a little bit, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise. It was actually, I had my reel on a little DVD and America's Most Wanted on my resume, letter of recommendation from John Walsh, which is a little silly. People would look at that and say, okay, that's fine. Welcome to Los Angeles. You've only been here for a month. Would you like to PA for the office for 12 hours a day up in Burbank? So that's when I realized that if I'm going to...
Which actually is a killer opportunity that some people would stab their best friend to PA on the office. Sure.
Oh, by The Office, I don't mean the show.
Oh, not the show, The Office.
No, I mean the office that's
office
making.
You never heard of.
The office that's making the Jersey Shore up in Burbank.
Right.
Yeah. So it was humbling because.
Right. You were given entry level anyway.
Entry level anyway, and it was kind of the case where it was like, well,
so
you've been working in DC.
My assumption that it was good. The my assumption was false.
Both of our assumptions were false. Yeah, exactly. So, I think out of necessity. I jumped into freelancing, kind of working little jobs here and there. Luckily, somehow, America's Most Wanted was canceled, picked up again by Lifetime, and then they reached out to me, and then I found myself editing the actual show, in my little bedroom in East Hollywood with a producer behind me, and the executive producer would come over, and it would be like, Nobody should be editing a Lifetime show or a bigger budget show out of their bedroom. And it was kind of like just pretending I was working in an office. We called it the West Coast Bureau, you know?
Right. But so, that was because there was you and a few people were out here?
I think at
it
this
wasn't
point...
It wasn't even just like voice Skype and it wasn't just working remotely. There actually were other people here?
No, I think that was, that was the joke. It was just a lot of people off in the East Coast, but they really liked my editing.
Oh,
and so they just really wanted me to continue working.
Truth is, in this day and age, you don't have to be there.
You don't have to be there. Yeah. And honestly, professionally, this is kind of my Trojan horse where I've been editing for too long. You know, I've been editing for 10 years or so. So at this point, I know what I'm doing. So I'll work at a company for a little while. I'll edit for them, and they'll really enjoy my stuff. And then I'll say, okay, this is great, but I would like to... I'm really a director. That's really my passion. And I would love to continue working with you guys. I like what you're doing, and I'll edit my own stuff. And then they'll throw me directing jobs, and I'll edit them too. They only have to pay one person. And that usually works out. And so I kind of, just funnel my editing
and that's
skills.
In TV or?
Mostly these days, digital. A lot of stuff for Facebook or YouTube, branded content. I've directed for GQ's YouTube channel and Vanity Fair. I've done stuff for UpRocks, this media company that...
Yeah, with X's?
Yeah, two X's, you got it. Yeah,
I've seen that.
Right, they're just bought by Warner Music recently. They started focus on basketball and sports, but now, yeah, they're everywhere, and I've done a bunch of stuff for them with Activision and
right. So Ubisoft. You really are a web content producer of because you can edit, direct, and sounds like produce too, just by default.
Yeah, well, the producing side, I've been lucky enough to have my eyes blindfolded when it comes to the budgets and all that. So I've been given too much creative control, I think. And so the producing, I have to say...
Because you're saving them so much money off the bat that...
I don't know what it is.
They don't bother saying, by the way, you can only spend X.
Right. I'm not sure what it is. I think that I've just been lucky.
Or they're budgeting it at, like, you know, 50K and they're letting you spend 10 of it and they're keeping 40 and,
yeah,
you know, going on, you know, making a yacht payment.
Right, right, exactly. That's probably what's happening.
Who knows? I assume there's corruption at all levels.
Right, that's a good assumption. I think that protects you. I think that's in LA, that's a great thing to assume.
So you have this awesome gig out of your bedroom, as you're saying. You obviously have a good setup.
Yeah, my good
you
setup,
can make
including
professional content
and a 2011 iMac. Yeah, that can do HD. I think at that point, I'm sure 4K was a thing that was on the table. And this was maybe I was like 24 or something, and actually making a decent day rate. And then I think that kicked off about maybe three years of freelancing as an editor and using the time between to work on passion projects and scripts and all that.
Mostly writing, or did you shoot some stuff now and then for yourself?
Yeah, it was mostly writing, I think. I bought myself a little Mark II at some point and started travel shooting, things like that. Started a little travel blog immediately. Got distracted with cathedrals and let that alone. That's the one thing that'll kill your career, is too many passions, too many interests. That's how I feel.
When you're a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Exactly, exactly. So much so that I started thinking of calling my blog like Master of None before the Aziz show.
Yeah, before Aziz.
And that's really kind of maybe not the best selling point that you want to want to call yourself.
And I will apologize, nothing but apologies for you, but we have a fountain that's like leaking like crazy, so when the guy shows up,
yeah,
you can join me in the backyard to briefly talk to him or not, you know, you can
see. Great, yeah, we can take this out of the studio, make this kind of like a
if only we could carry it with us.
This American life thing.
If talk about, you know, white person problems. No, I mean my fountain is emptying too quickly because it's splashing out because,
yeah,
with all the rains, the earth beneath it shifted because it's so heavy.
No justice, no peace.
You know, those people in Somalia don't have to deal with this stuff.
That's true. Because they don't have water.
They don't have clean water.
Yeah.
I have potable water that's just circulating around a fountain and it's spilling
not
out.
Not being drunk by Somalians.
No, I mean, someday I'll fill the fountain with the blood of the poor.
Right.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah. You have to get it fixed first.
Knock on wood. Film festival gets us 7 days a week.